We found out that basically operating conditions sort of limits us. You get some fog and weather, you can have some difficulties with some of these systems. A lot of people have been touting these systems as to be able to replace manned systems. And again, that's for a safety reason, you don't want to have to put somebody up in some of these conditions. And under some conditions, they did very well. So we're still compiling the actual data and lessons learned here. So it's a little bit early to know how much effort it was to do it. But we got all collected information from all of the units, and we were able to find the buoys afterwards and pick them all up and bring them back.
And what was the spill simulant that you mentioned?
Actually, we put some oranges in the water because they're very visible, and they float really well. And then we also used a little bit of the dye that actually had been checked on the state. Actually, it's a vegetable dye that the state has already approved for use in exercises up there. So we wanted to make sure we were conscientious of the environment and what we did, but made it realistic enough that people could understand what we were looking at and how we were doing things.
And what was the biggest of the simulated spills that you had?
Oh, not a whole lot. We're talking about 5 cases of oranges. 30 oranges per case or so, maybe 150 oranges at one time. Again, we just wanted to minimize any kind of potential impact that might have been up there. When we start talking larger than that, then we have to be much more careful, and which we always plan on being anyway. But this, we found out enough information with the minimal amount.
And is this the first type of simulated spill that you folks have ever done?
No. I've been in the Great Lakes 3 winters in a row in January, February, and back then we were actually putting in oranges and peat moss. The states of Michigan let us do that, and again, small amounts, but enough that you could track them and try to tell what if the video systems were working, whether you actually were detecting, and then trying to figure out the extent. Again, it's very similar to you would be if you're in a real spill, of trying to figure out where it is and how thick it is and how big it is.
The folks who have been in Alaska for a long time, of course, remember the Exxon Valdez, and of course a lot was made back in the day of winds, where they were coming from, how fast they were going, and where the oil was going to move as a result of that because of surface winds. Did you see any impact on surface wind activity and perhaps surface ice, and that also complicating predicting where the oil might move?
We don't tend to do the trajectory work ourselves. That's all with NOAA. They have the expertise there. But just from a glance, things followed as we expected. For example, the orange basketball buoys that are designed to float with oil, they're called oil tracking buoys. When we recovered them, they were surrounded by oranges. So that told us at least the information we were getting was very consistent. And yes, the issue with winds is a big deal. With some of the systems, if it gets too windy, that means the fog goes away. But then when it's not windy, the fog comes back. So sort of the trade-off of which of the systems work on under what conditions. There was a big project ongoing by Office of Naval Research up there trying to look at more of this mixing, because it is a complicated issue.
And you use some of the drones here as part of your project?
Well, that's correct. I don't like to use the word drones. I
oh.
use to, unmanned vehicles, but everybody thinks negatively, I'm afraid. But yes, we overflew the oranges and the dye with the aerostat and with the aerial vehicles, as well as we basically used the surface vehicle to support us in terms of collecting environmental data further out. So we were able to document that, and again, we're still looking at what data they actually collected and how it was documented.